And a happy Tuesday, everybody. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. He is Big Joe Dubin. I'm Chase McCabe. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier on the ones and twos as well. Hope you're having a good day so far. What's up, JoJo?
I am proud to announce that I have also flipped from McDonald's Egg McMuffins in the morning to Wendy's, the biscuits they have, for $2.19. And I'm telling you, that should be the story today, unlike something else that's happening across town about some kid flipping around, right? Am I right?
No, I think so.
Thank you.
Is there other news that we should be talking about?
They're offering me more money. So I was like, I'm going to go do that. That's the bottom line about money.
The way it goes. Yes, there are reports all over Twitter or X that Jared Curtis, the five-star quarterback from Nashville Christian, has in fact flipped his commitment from the Georgia Bulldogs again, but this time,
right,
to the Vanderbilt Commodores, that he wants to stay home.
Good for him. You know, if he's happy, and you know, if signing day's tomorrow, isn't that crazy? Used to be the first Wednesday in February, but now it's now, right? Yeah. It's happening now. So, and plus the portal, all that plays a lot with it. But I mean, he's good. I've seen him play many times. He's a heck of a quarterback, and hopefully it translates to the next level. But good for, I mean, that's what happens when you win. All this great publicity, people want to come play for you. Clark signing that 6-year extension there, no question about him leaving. And Diego, I mean, putting them on the map. So good for them. And Curtis is a heck of a, he's a big dude, like 6'4", 6'5". And good for Clark, good for Barton Simmons. I think in all this, Barton Simmons doesn't get enough.
Yeah. You know what's crazy is when a story like this would have happened 5 years ago, who would we have called to have on the air?
Barton Simmons.
Right, to talk about it.
Yeah.
And now Barton Simmons is the guy responsible partly responsible for getting him there. I remember when they said he was going to the game – I was like, oh, watch out. And, you know, at first I think a lot of people were like, I wouldn't read too much into it. Like, why would you pick Vanderbilt over Georgia?
Right.
But I think they've changed that narrative. They have changed that narrative. Now, can they keep changing that narrative and keep it going?
Right.
You know, that time will tell. But I just remember going like, hey, I mean, I know he lives here and he's from here and, you know, his coach went there and everything. But where there's smoke, there's fire.
You're right. Was it the Auburn game that he went to and people were like, or LSU game? Or
I think it was LSU.
All right, and they were like, yeah. I mean, I went to the LSU game with my brother. I'm telling you, that wasn't like any Vanderbilt atmosphere I've ever seen, and it was crazy. It was loud. I mean, it was loud. And that's what winning does, man. Winning turns everything around. So good for him, good for Vanderbilt. Nashville Christian plays in the state championship Thursday down in Chattanooga, and I forget who they play. But they're down there Thursday. So he's got one more thing to do before winning the state championship and then go to Vandy and make things happen there.
They play – hang on, I'll pull this up.
The University of School of Jackson.
Okay, thank you.
USJ.
Which is – they've won before, right?
I think that's where Trey Smith went to high school, if I remember correctly, in Jackson. I think that's right, yes. They're really good. Also, your Panthers play –
it is the Chase versus Plaster Bowl, as the Panthers will play BGA.
Oh, I would love to see you.
I really want to go, to be honest with you.
You punt to him and then go downfield and try to tackle Plaster. You talk about two.
Hey, look, we were both at his bowling event last night.
Yeah.
This is not a made-up thing. I witnessed it. Darren McFarland was standing there, too. He saw it. George hit 6 strikes in one game. I mean, he bowled 6 strikes.
Not in a row.
I think like 4 were in a row.
Okay.
I think it was 6 out of 7.
Not bad.
Yeah. And so, I mean, Darren and I are looking at each other like, what just happened? Like, and then Willie walked down, Pat Sperduto, like everybody had to see this.
I want to see you.
So I think George is in a secret bowling league on like Thursday night.
Well, that's great, but I want to see you and him in the Oklahoma drill. It'd be like two, it'd be like two hobos fighting over a bologna sandwich. I mean, just going at each other.
Chase, now hold on a second.
No, Chase, you're going to hit me. Don't hit me in the face right there.
that's the moneymaker.
No, but good for you, man. It's celebrate your team being in your alma mater being the state.
Well, it was funny. I truthfully, I was like, is it Saturday? Is it Friday? Like. And I was like, yeah, you know, my alma mater plays yours on Saturday. And it was Chase, the game's Thursday, and by the time you figure out what day it is, my team will be up by two touchdowns.
Oh, he's like, hey, Parker, get over here and punch Chase in the stomach for me.
Parker was running around last night, too, doing a good job.
Parker's doing a great job.
Were you parking cars? Like, what were you doing?
What are you doing? Serving drinks?
Basically.
Parker's behind the bar. What can I get for you? It's like a Shirley Temple. It's like, I gotcha.
It's like Brian Kelly invites him and then makes him park.
With Robert Saleh and Matt LaFleur.
Oh, yeah, that's who it was. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
For those that know, when Brian Kelly, the embattled, fired LSU coach, was in coaching Division II, his two grad assistants were Robert Saleh, Matt LaFleur, and he had a Christmas party. And they got all excited, like, we're going to go to a Christmas party with the coach, and everybody's going to be there. And Brian Kelly makes them park cars all night long. And then nobody tipped them, and nobody said thank you. And they said, if we ever get in a position like that, we're going to treat everybody good, not like how he treated us. So Brian Kelly was a jerk years past. So
oh, yeah.
That goes on.
That hasn't changed. But got a great show plan. We'll obviously talk a lot about Jarrett Curtis flipping to Vanderbilt. Talk some Titans as well. Terry McCormick going to join us at 12:30. Tim Hasselbeck at 1. Peter Burns from ESPN and the SEC Network at 2 o'clock to talk more about the coaching carousel and all of that. The New England Patriots and Mike Vrabel opened up a can of whoop-ass last night on Monday Night Football, and right, they continue to just storm through the NFL at the chagrin of Amy Adams Strong.
I love it. I absolutely – something happened in the
game last
night.
I hope they never lose again. I hope they run the table. I hope they win the Super Bowl.
Right.
I don't even like the Patriots, but I'm petty, and I just – it would be fantastic.
Well, if they get the Super Bowl, wear those uniforms they wore last night because, my God, they look perfect. Did you see the New York Giants kicker miss the field goal? I've never seen that, and when Troy Aikman said it the same time I said it, I'm like, holy cow. He stubbed his toe, I guess, and then missed the ball completely like Charlie Brown. And then the holder's oh, no. Like, what the hell? And I think there were six Patriots chasing him and just buried him on the ground. And then they cut the Jackson dart, and he says, oh, my God, with such disdain on his face. I'd never seen that in football before, but the best part was when the holder realized he's going to get put in earth, in middle earth, and he stands up to run, and they just slam him. Vrabel's even kind of laughing about it. I mean, it was something, but they're 11-2. They got a bye week. Then they got to finish out with Buffalo, the Jets, Miami, and somebody else. I mean, there's a chance they go 15-2
and
have the number one seed.
I feel like right now
it's them and the Broncos.
Yeah, which is good. I mean, it's kind of fun to see. I mean, I know the Patriots did it for a while with Brady, but you know, to kind of see it back to what it, you know, to see two teams that really haven't been there in a while, I think is entertaining.
And the
and
third
it's
team.
Entertaining because you know Amy Adams Strong oh, is yeah. like ready to just punt somebody.
Oh, you know those games. I bet that his name is not even mentioned around anywhere at the facility around her, anything, but good for him. I mean, he got what he wanted.
Hey, Amy, did you
let me ask you this.
Did you watch the game last night?
Could he have done that here? Had they given him what he has in New England, could Mike Vrabel yeah. done that here?
Yeah.
Absolutely could have.
If he had the right roster, I mean.
Well, that's anything. But
yeah, but I mean, I think when I knew he could do it is that year that Henry was hurt, and they used 90-something players.
21.
And won the number one seed.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that showed me what kind of a coach he was.
Right.
Now, could he be a jackass and, you know, like, piss you off and, you know, some of the decisions he made, like, go, what are you doing, Mike? Of course. But I think the good outweighed the bad. And I go back to, you know, around now – in 2022, and like, why didn't you just give them a chance to fix it? I'm not exonerating John Robinson, but I just feel like they should have gotten a chance to fix it.
After 23?
Whenever he got fired. Was
23.
23.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, I forget about 22. Like, was that Ravens?
That's when they didn't make it because she fired John Robinson.
So the 22. All right, so it was the 21 season. They won the number one seed. They lost to the Bengals.
Yes, sir.
And then it was the next season?
22 is when they fired John Robinson after the Eagles game, and they lost seven straight,
right.
Wherever it was.
Right, right, right.
Didn't make it. 23, they're trying to get everything together. Rand comes in. They go 6-11.
Right, okay. And there's been there's been so much crap that it just, I forget, it runs together.
Yeah, and I think if she would have given Vrabel the control, Henry stays. They get some more linemen in here. I think Tannehill probably would have stayed for another year, and then he would have had an opportunity to do it. But that was not going to happen. And now you see what he's doing in New England at 11-2, and I think, 9 or 10 straight, whatever it is, and rolling. And it's just really sad because you think he might have been able to do that here. And, like, all you Vrabel detractors go, he didn't make the playoffs, and 18 and 22 and 23, and last game he won was in 19 over the – I get all that. You know how many teams have never been there? And look at him now. How'd he go into New England and be 2-11 right now? Like, well, he would have got that done here, but the fact that you knew he was going to get it done up there, bingo. Even the Browns had him in their offices last year, and he's able to get out of there. So you'll see what happens.
So, by the way, I guess this is Jared Curtis's Twitter account. A lot of people are sending this. He has said, don't know where all this is coming from. Haven't had a chance to talk to either school yet. Keep y'all posted.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I'm assuming that's him, but I don't know.
Kirby, Vandy's offered me 1.7. What are you going to offer me? Kirby's like, probably 1.2 because I got 3 more of you sitting in my office right now.
Yeah.
And be gone.
I mean, he could – look, we can talk about this coming up next. I think he could – if he went to Vandy, he could start next year as a true freshman.
I don't know who they got. I have no idea.
They don't – I don't think they have after Diego on the roster right now.
Probably not.
I mean, so either you're going to – you flip him and start him as a true freshman, which is, dangerous. Or you play the portal and go get your next guy, which my guess is, I wonder if that's the discussion of like, hey, we're gonna go get somebody in the portal. Now, if you beat him out, you beat him out. But you need to understand you're a freshman.
Right. I mean, if it doesn't work out, you're second
team. We'll redshirt you and then you're the guy. But, I mean, and we can ask Tim about this too, because like I just think in today's college football with everything that's at stake, I think gone are the days of a true freshman coming in and, doing the things that we've seen in years past. I just think with the portal and the availability of getting a veteran, that's what more teams are going to do. And that way the kid can sit and learn.
Is Ohio State quarterback, is he a transfer? I don't know.
He might be. He actually might be the exception to the rule. He's a transfer?
Parker said that he spent a week at Alabama, Julian Sayin.
Okay, but is he a freshman?
Yeah.
Is he? Because Saban's like, there was a jackass in Alabama that kept him third team, and that was him. So, but you look, is Mendoza transfer too, right? Isn't he? I mean, so you look at all these quarterbacks now, they're all transfers. Nobody really sticks around for a while. That is college football now. But if Jared Curtis on his official Twitter is not seeing anything, then I don't know where all this is coming from. Because it's being reported everywhere that he's flipped.
Yeah.
From Georgia to Vanderbilt.
Yep. So we'll continue to discuss that and much more. 615-737-1025 is our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Question of the day.
All right, our question today is a fun one that we got for today. A friend of mine got a ticket down in Alabama. He rolled through a red light.
Needed a spotter.
He rolled through a red light, and he got a ticket, and the ticket was $272. Because the guy, he said, I didn't run the red light. And the cop said, well, you rolled halfway through the intersection, so you ran the red light. So good for the officer getting the ticket. Our question, what's the most expensive ticket you've ever gotten behind the wheel? What's the most expensive ticket?
You're going to make me tell this story.
You've ever gotten. And I'd say for speeding or for any kind of infringement or violation for driving, what's the most expensive speeding / driving ticket you've ever gotten in your life?
I will tell you coming up next. It's a funny story.
All right.
Involves family. Our question of the day presented by Aries Tactical. Your safety, your skill, your Aries Tactical. Check them out at ArriesTactical.com. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe on this Tuesday, 102.5 The Game. Dr. Crane with a little Eastbound and Down. Good stuff. A little Smokey and the Bandit. All right, so here's my. You asked the most expensive ticket. I will say this, and I'm scared to say this, but I'm going to say it. Since I have been driving, since the age of 16 years old, I have gotten 2 tickets in my life.
That's it?
That's it. Liar. Knock on wood. No, I'm not lying. Nope. That is, I got the first one. I was in college at MTSU and got out of class, had to pee, was going to my apartment on Main Street. Those of you in Murfreesboro, Maine, there by campus, you know that's just fish in a barrel. And got pulled over, and the cop did not care that I had to pee. So that was the first one. And then the second one, which I think at the time, I think it was like $175 was the second one. It was the night before Thanksgiving. I am driving my mother and my grandparents through BFE, Texas, on the way to my cousin Gary's house, which is just outside of Dallas or Fort Worth in Denton. So close to North Texas in that area. And we're on some highway. It's going through towns. And my grandfather and mother are both trying to tell me what to do and where to go and all this stuff.
Right.
And so I miss that the speed limit changed and went from like 65 to 45. And all of a sudden, boom, I get lit up. And the cop was like really nice, but he's like, I'm still writing you a ticket. And I was pissed. And my grandfather felt bad. My mom was like, well, you shouldn't have been speeding. I'm like, well, you shouldn't have been talking to me the whole time.
Well, how much was the ticket?
175.
That's not bad.
Yeah. So
how old were you?
19.
Did you take a driving test or go to class?
No, it was in Texas.
Okay.
Like there was nothing I could, I mean.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to stay down there to go to.
I got a ticket in Valdosta, Georgia. Dale, if you're listening, you know the story. Trooper pulled me over, was going 87, and it was the speed limit was 65. He gave me a $555 speeding ticket.
Good Lord.
And I said, as a smartass, I said, you put an extra five on there. And he's like, did I? And I showed him to him. He's like, well, I'm about to add another five. And I'm like, okay, I'll shut up. And $555 ticket in Georgia outside Valdosta in 2002. I don't know if I cried or was just shook. I don't remember. I was like, oh, so every time I go through Georgia, I don't speed. I really don't speed. So I'm like, that guy's waiting for me. Something goes off when I go through Georgia. And there it is.
Here's the best part, too, because I know you've probably done this. I don't know why we think this when we're kids, of like if something like this happens, mom won't find out.
Yeah, right.
So that first speeding ticket I got in college, I was like, you know, again, I was like, okay, well, I won't tell anybody. Not thinking, hey, idiot, you know something's going to go to your house, right? It's not going to be mailed to your apartment. It's going to be mailed to where the car is registered.
Right.
So like a month later, I go home for something and, you know, just kind of walking in and she's like, hey, you got some mail over there. And I was like, oh, okay, thanks. And she goes, and she's just holding it. She goes, care to tell me about this?
So did you not pay it?
No. Well, then I did. I mean, I think for that, yeah, that one I went to, that one I got, they threw out.
Okay.
I don't remember. I guess I went to driving school.
Is it, if somebody can answer this, if you go to court to protest it and the officer doesn't show up, do they throw it out?
Okay. Yeah.
But if I go, there's like eight officers there. Like, yeah, we're not getting this guy. You're not getting off of that. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah, the officer, and it was campus police too. So they were like, they were like, whatever.
Okay. All right. Well, good for you then.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's our question. The most expensive speeding ticket or driving ticket you've ever gotten. Let us know. 615-737-1025.
0667. One time in Utah, I got a $450 ticket for doing 102 at a 70.
Good Lord.
Didn't realize what my speed was. Spaced out at 2 a.m. while driving inmates across the country.
Oh, my. Were you on a runway? Good Lord.
Let's see. Dustin in Hopkinsville. I had 19 citations at the age of 26, and I haven't had one since.
Oh, I bet you somebody sitting over there has not had a speeding. Have you ever had a ticket, Dr. Crane?
No, sir, I haven't.
I believe that.
100%.
I've been pulled over multiple times with my grandmother in the car, ironically, but minus that, we've been good.
Knock on wood. Was Nani taunting people? What's going on here?
No, just every time we'd leave for dinner at like a Mexican restaurant, we'd come back and lights would be behind me and there'd be multiple cop cars. And he'd say, hey, your fog lights are on. Oh, my bad. Sorry about that. And I just turn on the regular headlights.
Multiple cop cars?
Yep.
What the hell's going on here?
I don't know.
It just happened
twice.
So let me ask you something.
Okay.
When you've been pulled over twice?
Yes.
Is that what it is? Was the cop a male or a female?
They both were male.
Both were male. Okay. Do you, because I can totally see you being like my dad, like officer walks up and you just make a joke. And you're like, how we doing, officer? Was it going a little too fast?
Well, the first time I do recall this, I was on Church Street. I turned right, and then there were just blue and red lights behind me, and I rolled my window down. He goes, hey, just want to let you know your front lights are off. I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Here's my license and registration. He goes, I don't need that. I was like, okay. So that's how the first one went. The second one.
What, Church Street, downtown Nashville?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, the second time, that was something. My Nani, she at the time had her hip surgery, so I had to get her in the car.
Oh, we're blaming Nani for this.
No. It was just a good way to get out of things.
All right. You
know? And I don't think I was speeding or anything. I think they both were headlight like situations. And so the guy was like, oh, I'm not going to write you a ticket, but just want to let you know your headlights were off. And it was like 7 o'clock at night. I was like, yeah, I'm going off the lights of the street. And I gave him my license and registration. And he goes, yep, you're good to go. I was like, really? Yeah, no ticket. I was like, okay.
Model citizen, zero discipline.
Just pay your taxes, folks.
Nice. Yeah, that's funny. I can see, I think I've told this story before. My dad got pulled over in Bellevue because he ran a red light. He pushed it on yellow. And the officer walks up and says, well, sir, you kind of ran that red light. And he goes, oh, come on. It was still pink. And the cop laughed so hard.
He got out of it?
Yeah. He's like,
perfect.
He's like, slow down. Don't run it. Nice. He goes, next time it's pink, stop. He's like, I've never heard that one before. Let's go to Joey with a ticket story. Joey, what's up?
Hey, guys. So I'll preface it real quick. This was when I was still in the Air Force. I had to go and stay in Norfolk. I was catching up to a team going to Afghanistan. It was 2012 in November. And they dropped us off in Norfolk, Virginia to catch a rotator, but it was like 5 days till Christmas, and we were just supposed to sit there and wait for them. So I rented a car and drove home to Tennessee. And on my way home, you know, there's no one out. It's like 3 a.m. I'm doing maybe 10, 15 over. I had it on cruise control, and a cop pulls me over. Well, he's not awesome at all. And the whole time he's telling me I got to show up for court. And I said, sir, I'm going to be in Afghanistan. He's like, I don't care. You need to show up for court, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, okay, cool. You know, write me the ticket. I'm not going to be there. It ended up being about $485. Woo! My dad had to show up and pay for it while I was in Afghanistan because obviously I could show up.
Where were you? Where were you when you got the ticket?
I was in Virginia. I was supposed to wait for a week to catch my flight out of Norfolk to go to Afghanistan, but it was almost Christmas time and my family was in Tennessee and I was not going to just sit in the hotel room. So I was driving from Norfolk to Clarksville.
Well, good for you, man. I'm sorry you got that. That officer, come on, man.
Come on now.
Appreciate you, Joey.
Thanks, Joey.
Thanks, guys.
We'll keep these going throughout the show. We'll have some fun with this today. But coming up next, we're going to talk some Titans with our man Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. He will join us next. Jason Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Jason Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. Titans continue their losing ways, and we'll take on the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland coming up this weekend. We say hello now to our good buddy that we saw last night, Terry McCormick, Titan Insider. Terry with us now. What's up, Terry? How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys? How was your bowling game last night?
Oh, it was great because it just ended up being me, Darren, and George just messing around and plaster through like 6 strikes. So apparently he's in a bowling league somewhere.
Oh, so he's a ringer now, huh?
He's a ringer now. So he tried to deny it, but we're like, we all saw it, so we know something's going on. But nonetheless, it was a good time and a good event that George puts on every year, so it was really cool to be a part of. This Titans team, you and I were kind of chatting about this a little bit last night. You know, I don't know what to think because I feel like that Cam Ward shows some signs of moving in the right direction. Then he shows signs of regression. But how much of that is you got an interim, you know, lame duck coaching staff, you have a bad offensive line, you have a hurt receiver core and not a lot of weapons around him. So how much is it that, okay, there should be concerns on his development, and how much is it is let's see what it looks like after the new regime is in there with the coaching staff and Borgonzi has a chance at another draft class?
Yeah, I think it's all of that, Chase. I think it's one of those deals where, you know, he's not played as well as I think they probably would have hoped so far. Granted, it is a terrible situation with not a lot of weapons, not a great offensive line, no running game. You know, you probably couldn't have dropped him into a much worse situation if you tried. Now, that said, you know, with a number one overall pick, there are expectations on the guy, fair or unfair, that, you know, people expect to be met. Say, hey, this guy should be doing this or this guy should be elevating this team. And it's only happened on a couple of occasions so far this year. And I think one of the things that, you guys feel free to disagree with this, but last year it felt like they were too aggressive in the passing game, the way Will Levis and Mason Rudolph operated, and it's pointed out by 21 interceptions that those guys threw between them. This year, they've only thrown 6 interceptions. Of course, Cam Ward's taken every snap, so he only has 6 interceptions, which is great. But the trade-off of that is he only has 7 touchdown passes, which is way, way below. That's like last in the league of anybody that's played any measurable amount of time at quarterback this year. And I think, you know, with nothing left to play for but just to try and develop Cam Ward, why don't you unleash him more? Why don't you go for 4th-and-3? Why don't you see a little bit more of what this guy can do so that you can get a full evaluation of what he might be down the line, even though it's going to be a new coaching staff and new players around him?
Do you think that the reason they're not doing that is because the upper brass has basically said, hey, let's be conservative with him right now? Or, I mean, because I'm with you. I don't understand it either. Like, if I'm Mike McCoy and I'm anybody on this coaching staff except for maybe Bones Fossil, I know, like, I'm probably looking for a job next year. So what do you got to lose? And I feel like the defense has done that. I feel like, the defensive group, even though they're not the best and they've had injuries, I mean, I feel like they're playing their butts off. So I don't understand that either.
I think some of it is just the conservative nature of Mike McCoy and the way he coaches. I mean, it just feels like that. I mean, it feels like that they've been much more conservative since Mike McCoy took over for Brian Callahan. Not saying that Brian Callahan didn't have his faults, but I think Brian Callahan was more open to a passing attack and trying to push the ball downfield. It just feels like right now that they're not even attempting to push the ball down the field unless somebody's standing there wide open and, you know, with no one within 10 yards of them. Other than that, it feels like everything is a check down or everything is a 12 yard out or a little, you know, slant across the middle. There's really not a lot of aggressive play calls that are going on with Cam Ward in this offense right now.
Talking to Terry McCormick from Titan Insider. Terry, is that the worst football team we've ever seen at Nissan Stadium?
Hands down. Hands down. The Zach Mettenberger, Charlie Whitehurst team of 2014, yikes, 2015 would have mopped the floor with this team.
Oh. 2015 was pretty bad. 2004 was bad too, but I'm telling you, there's nobody on this football team now that you're like, oh, besides Simmons for the most part, like, oh, this is really good. And what the hell's happened to J.C. Latham, Terry?
That's a good question. It seems like at least a couple times a game he just gets boat raced on a play. Now, as an offensive tackle, you're not going to win every rep, and when you're going against a guy like Josh Hines-Allen, who's probably a top 10 pass rusher in the league, you're not going to win every snap, but you can't get embarrassed like he missed that block that allowed Tajay Spears just to get smashed and resulted in a 3-yard loss. You know, some of it's probably assignment. Some of it, you know, he missed some time with the hip injury, but it just looks like, you know, that he's in his own head right now in terms of, you know, what he's doing out there on the field at times, you know, and that happens. Confidence is as big a part of this game as going out there and physically playing it. And right now it just looks like JC's confidence is in the tank.
Has an NFL team ever fired an interim head coach?
Not that I'm aware of. I've heard several people ask that. Not that I'm aware of. And, you know, But I think they're going to ride this out with Mike McCoy. It's only five more games, and then, you know, the coaching search will begin. You know, and if you're a Titans fan, could it have gotten much worse than it did Sunday with that lifeless performance? And then you watch Marcus Mariota throw a touchdown to Treylon Burks, and he makes the catch of the year in the end zone, and you're going, where was that when these guys were here?
Right. We all, but you've seen that throughout the years when they leave here, especially in the last 7-8 years, they go and do something fantastic. Let me ask you this, Terry. Probably the stupidest question you're going to be asked in a long time. Who's to blame?
No, this team can't win the Super Bowl, Joe.
Oh, yeah, they're eliminated. Who's to blame, besides Amy Adams Strunk, who's to blame for this disaster we see every Sunday?
It's collective. It's on coaching, and it's on the general.
It's a collaboration.
It's collaboration. It's a collaborative failure. I'm willing to give Mike Borgonzi a pass because I see some of the draft picks that he's made this year that look like they're on the way to working out. Jim DK, Gunnar Helm look like good players. You know, they may have a decent player in Kevin Winston. But you look at the draft classes of 2020 through 2024, there's probably five or six guys that are decent contributors. And there's really not a star player in the bunch in that whole five-year span. There is not one star player. The closest thing to it is Peter Skoronski, and he's a guard.
All right. I got to tell you, Terry, I love watching the Patriots and Vrabel because I know somewhere down in Houston somebody's getting driven crazy by his success. The Vrabel thing, I mean, what's the word, schadenfreude? You feel happy for somebody's failure who's feeling bad or whatever that word is? And I see that with Vrabel. I'm like, this is great because – in all purposes, I mean, he probably, at the end of the day, should have stayed here and been here and ran it his way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here's the thing. You had your longtime coach right there. You had your John Harbaugh, your Mike Tomlin, your Andy Reid type of guy right there, Mike Vrabel. And because he got sideways with the owner, they showed him the door. Now, was Vrabel completely, you know, innocent in that deal? No, because when you go 6-11, that's really not the right time to make a power play. But I think we're seeing now that Mike Vrabel's way of doing things would have had this team a whole lot closer to being back on track right now than where they went with it. And, you know, I mean, you just look at the whole change of dynamic in the way this team has played the last couple of years. Everything. You know, you had an identity then. You were a power run team. You took play action shots, in the pass game, and everything, you know, worked off of Derrick Henry. And then you had a hard nosed defense and that type of thing. What's the identity of this team now? It doesn't have one, really.
Right.
That's the problem. Terry McCormick is with us. So, if it's you picking the coach, who would you pick to be the next coach?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think I want somebody who has some leadership skills. Now, if Kevin Stefanski gets let go in Cleveland or if O'Connell gets let go in Minnesota, I'd jump all over one of those guys because they're good offensive coaches who call plays before. And and in the case of Stefanski, he knows what it's like to work for a dysfunctional organization and have some measure of success. But based on what's out there, it's probably going to end up being Matt Nagy or Mike McCarthy.
I'm with you on that. All right, so then the next part of that is, you know that you're probably going to have the number one overall pick again, which I think we would all agree you need to trade it this year because you got the quarterback and you need to build around the quarterback. So let's say they end up adding a bunch of draft assets, have 3, 4, maybe 5 picks in the top 100, which should be the goal. Then you know you got a ton of free agent room with cap room. Then what is the plan if you're Mike Borgonzi?
Well, I think the biggest thing that you got to do, yes, you've tried and tried and tried to fix the offensive line. I think you're going to have to live with most of that going into next year, maybe add one offensive lineman to replace Zeitler at right guard. I think the biggest thing you need a game-breaking receiver. You need somebody that other teams fear. And that can be found in the draft. Look at Egbuka with Tampa Bay. You know, comes in, makes an immediate impact. Look at what Jackson Smith and Jigba has done in two or three years with the Seattle Seahawks. You need to find a number one receiver. That needs to be priority one. And then the second priority is you need to find somebody on defense to complement Jeffrey Simmons, an edge rusher who can get after the quarterback and get you double-digit sacks. And then beyond that, you got to start replenishing cornerback. Wouldn't hurt to have some fresh blood at running back, and then just kind of go on down the line.
Nice. Terry, before we let you go, our question of the day is, what's the most expensive speeding/driving ticket you've ever gotten? What's the most expensive one you've had?
Probably about $150.
Where were you?
I do have a, probably in Gallatin, I think.
What were you doing, Terry? It's Gallatin.
I know. I do have a funny story, though, that happened earlier this year.
Sure.
That where I got out of a ticket. I was in Portland, and I got stopped for doing 48 and a 30. My wife was with me, and I was on the way to take her to a doctor's appointment. She went to see some specialist in Brentwood about something. And so this was probably like in February or March of this year. So I get pulled over, and we've got to get to this doctor's appointment. I roll down the window, hand my license, registration stuff to the officer. You know, he tells me how fast I was going. My wife, she's irate because I've gotten pulled over. She goes, "Can I just take the car and leave him here with you and write him a ticket?"
Please say he said yes.
He said, "No, ma'am, I can't do that." And he wound up letting me go.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, a little tandem there from the McCormicks. Well done, Terry, and well done, Mrs. McCormick.
Yes, she saved me. She saved me probably $150, $200 ticket.
You should take her to a nice dinner in Portland, not in Brentwood.
Exactly.
Terry, appreciate the time as always. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. With us on this Tuesday, we'll react to some of that and much more coming up next.
The Curtis thing now is, what the hell's going on?
I don't know.
It's like he comes out and says he hasn't done it, and everybody's like, he has. And others say, so we don't know. Jared Curtis, we don't know if he's flipped from Georgia to Vandy. There's really no final say. So my phone's blown up every 2 seconds. I'm like, I don't know yet. I have no clue.
I have no idea either. So we'll just have to wait and see. 615-737-1025. It is Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. By the way, I have updated Heisman odds. So this is from our friend at Music City Bets from DraftKings. Fernando Mendoza is the favorite at plus 160. Julian Seyin is next at plus 170. Diego Pavia at plus 190.
So right there.
He's going to New York.
Well, yeah. Who? I mean, that absolutely is.
Now, and I want to check this real quick.
Check it, pal.
Because it depends on where you look. Because there are some places that may have a little bit different. So, again, this literally popped up on Twitter as we were coming back on air. That is correct. FanDuel at plus 160. Has Fernando Mendoza and Diego Pavia tied as the favorite. Julian Seyin at plus 195.
It's happening, man. I'm telling you, if Ohio State puts him on his bottom Saturday and he has a terrible game, Pavia is elevated up there another notch. The only strike about Pavia, and when this, and they'll deny it, but yeah,
I think I know where you're going.
Is writers be like, well, he's flicking his family. I'm telling, that has nothing to do with what he's done on the field. And if you're a writer or voter who thinks that way, you should be ashamed of yourself. Absolutely ashamed of yourself.
I think that rightfully or wrongfully, they will look at how he, you know, they'll look at the family and they'll look at how he is too.
Yeah.
I think they dock points for personality.
I totally agree.
Which is total BS.
Because they didn't do it during Manziel, because when Manziel did it in 2012, we had never seen that before. We had never seen a guy that gregarious and that, you know, out there like that, celebrating everything. It's like, oh, okay. Then once he got the Heisman and then he was a flop in the NFL, all the voters like, ah, well, you know, ha ha, that's on you. And we should. So they don't like that. They don't like all that right now. They want you to score a touchdown and go to the bench and sit down. Ain't it the way it is anymore? It's not how it's happening. And he absolutely should be in New York City. Absolutely should be mentioned in the running for the Heisman Trophy. No player in the country means as much to his football team as he does. And they went 10-2. They lost on the road to Texas by 3 points. They were there with Alabama, and he screwed up at Alabama. I get that. But you're going to have speed bumps along the way, man. It happens.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Rick's asking us, do former Heisman winners get to vote?
Yes.
Okay.
They do.
Well, that's I actually think that helps.
Every one of them gets
like
a vote.
Diego.
Yep.
To me, it's just it's I mean, yeah, like there's a fine line here. Like if you're, you know, a bad person and like you're robbing cars and stuff, then okay, that should probably count against you. But if like you have a little bit of personality,
right,
you can't control your family. I mean, your family is like, if your brothers like to drink too much and
yeah,
have too much fun, like you that people, that's not Diego's fault.
You guys voted for Jimmy Carter and his brother Billy was just a drunken hillbilly. I mean, it's fine.
Did he have a beer?
Billy Beer, yeah, Billy Beer. He did, which is still worth some. I bet you Dr. Crane's got a Billy Beer around the house as a memento.
Probably.
Yep.
I have to go look. To be honest, I shouldn't say yes because I have no clue what a Billy Beer is.
It's a beer that
– Look it up. So Billy Carter is Jimmy's brother. In the, what, 70s?
Yeah.
Came out?
I mean, Clinton had a brother named Roger who was a disaster. I mean
– I do have a can of this in my grandmother's basement, actually.
I bet you do.
Do you really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a Falstaff beer down there, Billy Beer. There's a giant.
Will you take a picture of this?
Sure. Yeah, I'll find it. It's like, somewhere
that
down
is,
there.
That is badass.
Yeah, there's a Hams beer sign down there as
Hams.
Well. Yeah.
Nice.
What do you got down there? We need to go look and explore down there. Is this Nani's basement?
Maybe.
That's awesome.
He's like, no, I ain't telling you.
You're going down there.
We live way down in Manchester. We're not coming down there to do that.
Coming up next, we'll talk to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. He will join us next on 102.5 The Game.